Stower. I'll be reading from the May 20th, 2026 issue of the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Thank you for joining us today. The highlights under business and finance are: a weeks-long sell-off in government bonds intensified, threatening to drive up borrowing costs across the globe and knocking some momentum out of what had been a furious stock rally. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, and Dow fell 0.7%, 0.8%, and 0.6%, respectively. Regulators are scrutinizing for any impropriety, a flurry of oil trades timed for moments before Trump postponed strikes on Iran's energy infrastructure. The son of fashion chain Mango's billionaire founder was arrested by Spanish police and accused of playing a role in his father's death. A revolt against artificial intelligence is heating up as parents, workers, graduates, and voters at large take issue with the industry claims for the technology. Alphabet's Google is supercharging its Gemini artificial intelligence model to become more competitive in the era of agentic AI. Andre Karpathy, an OpenAI co-founder and former Tesla executive, joined Anthropic's pre-training team. Blue Owl co-founder Doug Ostrover recently sold the last of his stake in the Washington Commanders football team. Home Depot reported lower fiscal first quarter profit, and the company's chief financial officer said homeowners continue to pull back on big improvement projects. Stellantis said it would start producing a new range of electric vehicles to serve the affordable small car market in Europe. Now for the key articles under the worldwide section. Trump's agreement with the federal government he runs expanded to end in all pending tax audits on him and his businesses, according to a document posted by the Justice Department. The U.S. seized a sanctioned Iran-linked tanker in the Indian Ocean as Trump threatened to resume military strikes on Iran. The Senate advanced a resolution to limit Trump's ability to wage war in Iran without congressional approval, with Senator Cassidy among those voting yes. Representative Massey of Kentucky, a Trump antagonist on the Epstein files and other issues, lost his Republican primary to a candidate backed by the president. Trump endorsed Texas Attorney General Paxton for Senate over incumbent Cornyn, inserting himself into a hotly contested GOP primary. The two teenagers who gunned down three people at a mosque in San Diego appear to have been radicalized online, authorities said. Russia began nuclear forces maneuvers featuring practice launches of ballistic and cruise missiles in drills that coincide with a surge of Ukrainian drone strikes. UK police were investigating allegations of decades-old child sex abuse after reviewing information in documents from the U.S. Justice Department's Epstein probe. Israel intercepted 6 remaining vessels from an activist flotilla attempting to challenge a blockade of Gaza. The work of responders to the widening Ebola outbreak is being made even more difficult by the complex and violent politics of Eastern Congo. The picture on today's front page shows Vladimir Putin walking the red carpet with a plane in the background and military honor guard saluting him. And that caption reads, Act 2. Russian President Vladimir Putin is greeted by Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi after arriving Tuesday for meetings with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. The visit comes less than a week after President Trump wrapped up his own trip to Beijing. And the headline, In Beijing, now it's Putin's turn on the red carpet. Articles from the front page follow. Americans' AI rebellion grows, fed by energy cost, job losses. Dozens of communities are trying to ban new data centers. Public opinion sours at breakneck speed, creating headaches in fast-moving sector. By Amrith Ramkumar, Catherine Blunt, and Lindsay Ellis. The only thing growing faster than the artificial intelligence industry might be America's negative feelings about it, as former Google chief executive Eric Schmidt saw on Friday. Delivering a commencement address at the University of Arizona, Schmidt told students the technological transformation wrought by artificial intelligence will be larger, faster, and more consequential than what came before. Like some other graduation speakers mentioning AI, Schmidt was met with boos. In one poll after another in recent weeks, respondents have overwhelmingly voiced concerns about AI, a challenge to claims by industry executives that their technology would gain popularity by improving people's lives. Consumers resent energy price jumps exacerbated by the spread of data centers. Workers fear widespread job losses. Parents worry about AI undermining education and harming children's mental health. In recent months, the wave of anger has brought protests, swayed election results, and spurred isolated acts of violence. In April, a 20-year-old Texas man allegedly threw a Molotov cocktail at OpenAI chief executive Sam Altman's home and made threats at the company's San Francisco headquarters, according to a federal complaint filed against him. A few days earlier, someone fired 13 shots at the front door of an Indianapolis councilman who had recently approved a data center. It's something I never thought would be imaginable, said Councilman Ron Gibson, who found a note saying, no data centers, under his doormat. 2 days later, Gibson found a similar note saying, F you. Pollsters and historians said the souring of the public opinion is all but unprecedented in its speed. I don't think I've ever seen something intensify this quickly. Gregory Fahrenstein, who conducted a recent poll with researchers at Stanford University and the University of California, Berkeley, said of the backlash. The poll showed about 30% of Democrats think America should accelerate AI innovation as quickly as possible. compared with about half of Republicans and 77% of tech founders. Also unprecedented is the rapid rise of AI's anxiety salience as a political issue, one that is shaking up routine re-election races and scrambling partisan battle lines, political analysts said. After bubbling up in a handful of races last year, it has exploded onto the ballot across the country. Voters in Festus, Missouri, ousted four city council members a week after they approved a $6 billion data center. Dozens of communities in states from Maine to Arizona are trying to ban new data centers. Some 360,000 Americans are in Facebook groups opposed to the facilities, roughly quadruple the number from December. Figures from organizations fighting the AI buildup show. President's settlement expands to end his audits. People expect the same tax rules to apply to everybody. Pact Forever bars certain inquiries into tax returns filed by Trump, his family. By Richard Rubin, Washington. President Trump's extraordinary agreement with the federal government expanded Tuesday to end all pending tax audits of him and his businesses, according to a document posted by the Justice Department. In the document, signed by Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche, the government said it would be forever barred and precluded from pursuing certain claims against Trump, his businesses, and family members. The agreement specifically blocks the government from taking any action regarding tax returns that have already been filed. That agreement extends the settlement announced Monday, in which the government agreed to create a $1.8 billion fund to compensate people who claim to have been victims of so-called weaponization by the government, a move that could lead to payouts to Trump's allies. Trump, in exchange, withdrew a lawsuit against the Internal Revenue Service over the leak of his tax returns by an IRS contractor and ended administrative claims related to other investigations. The government had valid defenses against the lawsuit, but never defended it. In other similar cases, the government has argued that the fact that a contractor made such disclosures meant that the U.S. couldn't be sued. The president received no direct financial payout from the settlement, and Blanche told senators at a hearing Tuesday that Trump, a Republican, wouldn't get money from the fund. But ending the audits could be a significant financial benefit to the billionaire president and his family. The IRS is part of the executive branch, but the agency has historically tried to keep its enforcement operations free from political interference, and even the appearance of blurred lines caused major controversies during the Nixon and Obama administrations. The agreement between Trump as a taxpayer and the Trump administration is an unprecedented blending of personal and government interest, with a Trump-appointed official agreeing to remove the president, his family, and his businesses from tax enforcement. Representative Richard Neal of Massachusetts, the top Democrat on the House Ways and Means Committee, was sharply critical of the agreement addendum released Tuesday. As the president's personal lawyers and the DOJ operate as one, Trump's plan comes into focus. Pickpocketing you for your own gain while using the entire government as his personal army, Neil said. It's a dark, dark day for our democracy. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. China is jailing Christians, but pastor won't back down. Ezra Jin kept his church going and growing through years of intimidation. Now in a cell, his defiant faith rouses believers. By Brian Spiegel. Pastor Ezra Jin was just finishing dinner with his elderly mother-in-law in the Chinese city of Beihai last October when more than a dozen police appeared at the door. They stormed the apartment, confiscated his phones and computer, hauled him off to jail. Since then, he's been confined to a dank cell at Beihai's number 2 detention center, cut off from his flock and his family, 8,000 miles away in the U.S. His sin, leading a church that Xi Jinping couldn't bring to heel. For years, Jin built a thriving Protestant congregation in the heart of Beijing, known as Zion Church, that operated outside the government system of tightly controlled official churches. Authorities once tolerated Jin and others like him, back when China's economy was thriving and the country was gradually opening up to the world. Then Xi took power and began tightening the screws. Officials interrogated churchgoers and pressured landlords who rented space to churches. Authorities demanded surveillance cameras be installed at Zion. Some of Jin's assets were frozen, and he was barred from leaving China. Jin refused to back down. After authorities raided Zion in 2018 and shut it down, he took his preaching online using Zoom and other digital tools and reached more followers than ever, placing the pastor on a dangerous crash course with Xi's government. His arrest was part of one of China's biggest crackdowns on Christianity in decades. Jin is being held for suspected illegal use of information networks related to Zion's online ministry, along with 17 others associated with the church. The struggle is about more than one man's stubborn refusal to surrender his faith, to a degree many observers thought impossible when China's leader took power more than a decade ago. Xi has succeeded in using digital surveillance and tough jail sentences to silence activists, lawyers, and business leaders who speak out of turn. But he still can't fully control Christians who number in the tens of millions in China. In fact, many believers say the more authorities seek to suppress Christianity in China, the more the faith will spread. Members of Congress of both political parties passed resolutions criticizing China's actions and urge Trump to prioritize securing the release of Jin and other people it says have been wrongfully jailed in China. Young buyers tap bank of mom and dad in tight home market by Rachel Wolf. There's a lot to love about Jennifer Gross's new Phoenix home. The stucco, 4-bedroom, with a clay-tiled roof, has a 3-car garage, overlooks a park, and comes with a brick-bordered pool and a hot tub. It has arched entryways, floor-to-ceiling windows, and a second-story balcony. The best feature, her dad bought it for her. After years of annual moves in search of lower rent, Gross had ended up with a roughly 2-hour round-trip commute to work. Her father stepped in and offered to buy her a house. She gratefully accepted. "I save and I can afford a couch, but I can't afford a house," said Jennifer, adding that she never accepted financial help from her parents before, aside from staying on their cell phone plan. "What am I working for day after day?" Buying a home has always been a milestone of financial independence. For some young Americans caught in the least affordable housing market in decades, it has become a family affair. Strings attached. Jennifer's dad, Mark Gross, had a spending limit of $700,000 in one condition. She had to stay within 2 miles of him. The house they closed on last month was $625,000 and an 8-minute bike ride away. The mortgage is in her father's name, and Jennifer pays him $2,200 a month to cover a portion of the payments. He bought her sister, Jessica Locati, a house nearby a few months earlier, fulfilling their mother's dying wish that the family live close to each other. Face value, there is immediate judgment. "My dad bought me a house," Jennifer said. But she noted her family didn't grow up wealthy. The older generation saved and invested well and are now in a position to help the younger generation. Son Arrested in Fashion Tycoon's Death by Christina Gallardo. Barcelona. The son of fashion chain Mango's billionaire founder was arrested by Spanish police and accused of playing a role in his father's death after learning that he planned to change his will. Jonathan Andic was arrested at his home Tuesday morning and questioned by authorities at a police station northwest of Barcelona. He was released after paying bail of more than $1 million and agreeing to appear before a judge once a week, among other conditions. The arrest is the latest twist in a lengthy investigation into the mysterious death of Isaac Andic, one of Spain's most celebrated business figures. The fashion entrepreneur died in December 2024 when he fell more than 300 feet into a gorge while out trekking with his son in the Montserrat Mountains. The pair were alone on the hike. There's a graph on the front page showing Trump's tech trades since the middle of 2025 to now. And that caption reads, "Money managers for the president made more than 3,700 trades in the first quarter, including million-dollar purchases of NVIDIA, Dell, and other big tech stocks." The Trump Organization said the president's investments were independently managed by several financial institutions. Now for other articles within the paper. Berkshire rekindles love of airlines. "My name is Warren, and I'm aeroholic," Buffett once said. By Crystal Herr and Allison Sider. Berkshire Hathaway can't seem to quit its love affair with airlines. Warren Buffett had a tortured relationship with airline investments as the conglomerate's long-running chief executive and stock picker. Now his successor, Greg Abel, is showing an early fondness for them too, with Berkshire taking a new $2.6 billion position in Delta Airlines during the first quarter. Buffett told the Wall Street Journal on Monday that he wasn't involved in Berkshire's new Delta position, but he said he gave other investment ideas to Abel, who took over as CEO in January and has oversight of the firm's enormous stock portfolio. The airline industry is going through its latest challenge with a huge run-up in the price of jet fuel because of the war in Iran. Spirit Airlines shut down this month after the jump in fuel prices derailed its plans to emerge from a second bankruptcy. But Delta has led the industry's profits by focusing on affluent customers, and some investors are betting the carrier will increase its lead over rivals. This very long article tells of Buffett's ups and downs with his investments in the airlines. Government bond sell-off deepens. 10-year Treasury yield approaches 4.7%, its highest since January 2025. By Sam Goldfarb. A weeks-long sell-off in government bonds has intensified in recent days, threatening to drive up borrowing costs across the globe and knocking some momentum out of what had been a furious stock rally. With bond prices sliding, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note, a key benchmark for mortgage rates and other borrowing costs, reached as high as 4.687% Tuesday, its highest intra-day level since January 2025. The yield on the 30-year U.S. Treasury climbed to an 18-year high near 5.2%, helping send the S&P 500 to its first three-day decline since March. The blow has been particularly acute to technology and industrial stocks, with both sectors down more than 1.5% this week. The main driver of the bond sell-off is the U.S. conflict with Iran, which has paralyzed shipping through the Strait of Hormuz and kept oil prices about 60% above where they were before the war started. Yields on government bonds largely reflect what investors expect interest rates set by central banks to average over the life of a given bond. With elevated energy prices feeding into inflation, investors have dramatically shifted their rate expectations in the U.S. from anticipating cuts before the war to now betting that the Federal Reserve will raise rates by the end of the year. That shift mirrors a change in perspective about the conflict itself. Bond yields initially steadied after President Trump announced a ceasefire with Iran on April 7th. For the next few weeks, many remained cautiously optimistic that the two sides could reach a deal that would reopen the strait. But those hopes have dimmed recently, with both countries seemingly dug into their positions and trying to win a contest of wills. The U.S. countering Iran's Hormuz blockade with its own embargo of Iran's ports and vessels. From World Watch and the Associated Press, Ukraine. Russia holds drills amid drone strikes. Russia on Tuesday began massive maneuvers of its nuclear forces, featuring practice launches of nuclear-capable ballistic and cruise missiles in drills that come amid surge in Iranian drone strikes. The three-day exercise will involve 64,000 troops, over 200 missile launchers, more than 140 aircraft, 73 surface warships, and 13 submarines, including 8 armed with nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missiles, the Defense Ministry said. The maneuvers will focus on the preparation and use of nuclear forces under the threat of aggression, the ministry said. The drills will also practice cooperation with Belarus. Russian arsenals in Belarus include its latest intermediate-range nuclear-capable Oreshnik missile system. The maneuvers come as Ukraine has sharply intensified its drone attacks against Russia, including a weekend barrage on Moscow's suburbs that killed three and damaged several buildings and industrial facilities. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the editorial page, Trump's $1.776 billion weaponization fund. President Trump, his elder sons, and the family business moved Monday to dismiss their federal lawsuit against the Internal Revenue Service for the leak of Mr. Trump's tax returns. In exchange, the Justice Department said it will create a $1.776 billion fund to compensate targets of government weaponization. Could future historians ask for a better emblem of today's warped political age? The DOJ says the anti-weaponization fund will have the power to issue formal apologies and monetary relief outside of the typical legal process. The Trump family isn't eligible for payouts, but the rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, are likely to apply. They'll be eager to explain that they were simply in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that a police officer suddenly began smashing his face into their fist. The machinery of government should never be weaponized against any American. And it is this department's intention to make right the wrongs that were previously done while ensuring this never happens again, Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche said. We are setting up a lawful process for victims of lawfare and weaponization to be heard and seek redress. Mr. Blanche will appoint a 5-member commission to run the fund, and Mr. Trump can fire the commission members. Soon enough, they might be receiving claim paperwork from James Comey. I'll talk to my lawyers, the former FBI director told CNN, but it certainly sounds intended for someone like me. When IRS contractor James Littlejohn stole years of tax filings, he wronged Mr. Trump and many other Americans, and did it with an ideological motive. Mr. Littlejohn's lawyer said he was worried about inequality and hoped leaking confidential information would cause meaningful change. The leak was a huge scandal, and it didn't get the attention it deserved because the press largely agrees with Democrats who want to squeeze the rich. While Mr. Littlejohn was given 5 years in prison, civil cases can also be in order. Citadel CEO Ken Griffin sued the IRS, and his settlement involved a formal apology from the federal government. Other parties have filed suits against Booz Allen Hamilton, the consultancy that employed Mr. Littlejohn. Mr. Trump sued the IRS this January, asking for $10 billion, but he's simultaneously the agency's boss. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent reports to the president and serves at his pleasure, and so does Mr. Blanche. When Donald Trump sues the Trump administration, can President Trump agree to a settlement? Given the inherent conflict in Trump versus IRS, the federal judge assigned to the case wasn't sure she had jurisdiction to hear it. Mr. Trump is the sitting president, and his named emissaries are entities whose decisions are subject to his direction, Judge Kathleen Williams wrote last month. It is unclear to this court whether the parties are sufficiently adverse to each other as to satisfy Article III's case or controversy requirement. Judge Williams set a May 27th hearing on that question, and now the parties seem to be working in coordination to avoid her inquiries. Mr. Trump's court filing Monday sought voluntarily to dismiss the case. News reports say the Justice Department doesn't believe the agreement needs judicial approval. Mr. Blanche's two-page memo identifies the $1.77 billion as coming from the Judgment Fund, a permanent appropriation for U.S. settlements. As legal precedent, Mr. Blanche points to the Obama administration's $680 million deal in Keeps Eagle versus Vilsack, a case alleging Agriculture Department discrimination against Native American farmers, but it went through a judge. Also, Mr. Obama isn't a Native American farmer, and it wasn't Obama versus Vilsack. The Obama administration made plenty of outrageous settlements, including telling big banks to donate to outfits such as La Raza, a tactic that Republicans at the time rightly decried. Mr. Trump's settlement fund is an astonishing precedent, and if it proceeds, it is sure to become a highlight reel of Trump administration payments to Mr. Trump's friends and allies. Imagine the fun Democrats will have documenting it all between now and 2028 as the worst kind of Washington political payoff. From the opinion pages, Anthropic versus China. National security threats combined with fears of a looming AI financial shakedown, by Holman W. Jenkins, Jr. General Henry Hap Arnold, commander of the U.S. Army Air Forces in World War II, wanted to know how rockets, satellites, jet engines, and nuclear weapons might change warfare in the post-war world. Today, he couldn't have to invent the Rand Corps Anthropic, one of America's leading builders of artificial intelligence, perhaps later this year to become a trillion-dollar public company, is perfectly happy also to be its 21st century anti-China think tank. CEO Dario Amodei has been unflinching in claiming that we face a race with China, that the survival of democracy depends on who wins. Even amid its weird fight with the Trump Pentagon, Anthropic tools are almost certainly being used right now by the National Security Agency in its twilight cyber struggle with Chinese spies and hackers. While President Trump visited Beijing, Anthropic posted a 5,500-word manifesto on how to conduct this new AI Cold War with China. The fight only begins with the fact that the latest cutting-edge U.S. models, led by Anthropic's Mythos, seems to be uncannily good at finding dangerous and unsuspected vulnerabilities in all major software systems. China and criminal hackers are, at most, only a year behind. Next question, is this one problem or two? Increasingly, a sinister hue attaches to Beijing's preference for open weight models. Any user is free to adapt and modify them at will. Their Chinese builders, unlike Western AI builders, don't deserve the ability to monitor how the models are being used or exercise a kill switch over antisocial activities. Is this because China believes its national firewall and comprehensive surveillance renders it immune? Because it plans to put such tools in the hands of anti-Western hackers while preserving deniability? Beijing is still thought, by some, to have remained mum on early COVID because it believed China enjoyed a relative advantage in a global pandemic. During Mr. Trump's Beijing summit, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told CNBC, a key goal would be to make sure non-state actors don't get a hold of these models. To Anthropic and others, the pressing danger is to their business models and to any hope of getting paid back for their billions and billions in investment, which China, they believe, is deliberately trying to undercut. Anthropic's pitch for fighting back comes down to two things: China's access to top-tier chips and distillation, the illicit use of Western models to train Chinese models, hijacking, in the company's words, decades of foundational research, billions of dollars in U.S. investment, and the work of thousands of the world's best engineers. There's nothing like sitting down with AI mavens, as I recently did, to make a columnist swell with pride for possibly coining the term AI Chernobyl. Big questions loom. The Obama administration used drone assassinations against foreign terrorists. Should the same be visited on cyber kingpins? Kinetic and cyber action can both do severe economic damage. Both can cause civilian casualties. Should we stop treating one as warfare and the other as crime? It doesn't solve everything, but mutual assured destruction worked passably well for 70 years to hold off nuclear Armageddon. China's economy is no less subject to comprehensive cyber shutdown than ours, especially given its reliance on software-based systems for almost every kind of transaction, cash being all but obsolete there. Not to mention its government giant investment in software-based monitoring of citizens and their movements. The China fears are real. Don't underestimate, though, how much they are tangled up in worries about a coming AI shakeout. Take this week's defeat of Elon Musk in his lawsuit against rival OpenAI. Nominally, the case turned on OpenAI's conversion to a for-profit company, and Mr. Musk worries about Homo sapiens being displaced by super-intelligent robots. In fact, Mr. Musk was engaged in the great American tradition of waging lawfare against a business rival. This comes at a moment when he and others are looking to loft AI-related IPOs. Don't say it too loudly. This may be a race to shift to the public some of the losses from an AI build-out that seems increasingly unlikely to yield profits for every contestant. Such problems Hap Arnold didn't face. Rand was both an arm of the defense contractor Douglas Aircraft, but it was quickly spun off into a nonprofit to become America's premier Cold War think tank. Meanwhile, Douglas, now McDonnell Douglas, found it perfectly possible to sell fighter jets to the U.S. military, even while it set up a passenger jet factory in communist China. Monday's court ruling, to the chagrin of Mr. Musk, settled one question. OpenAI isn't a charity, but a business, with a $1 trillion valuation in the private market. A similar question may face Mr. Amodei and fellow Anthropic executives sooner than they think. Is Anthropic a business or an anti-China think tank? America may need both, but the company likely will have to choose if it wants the public to invest. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. What would Jefferson and Madison make of Musk and Altman? America's founders and Adam Smith knew better than to entrust the future to philosopher kings. By Jason L. Riley. A judge tossed Elon Musk's $150 billion lawsuit against OpenAI's Sam Altman this week after the jury determined that the Tesla CEO waited too long to file his claim. Mr. Musk said the verdict was decided on a calendar technicality and vowed to appeal. So perhaps this courtroom battle over artificial intelligence supremacy isn't over. Essentially, Mr. Musk sued Mr. Altman for being deceitful. The two teamed up to create a nonprofit AI lab in 2015, and Mr. Musk contributed most of the capital. At some point, Mr. Altman and Greg Brockman, another co-founder, changed their minds and decided to make OpenAI a for-profit enterprise. There is no question to anyone following the case in detail that Altman and Brockman did, in fact, enrich themselves by stealing a charity, Mr. Musk tweeted after Monday's verdict. The only question is when they did it. Mr. Altman was briefly ousted as CEO in 2023 after the board determined that he was not consistently candid in his communications. Within a week, however, he was reinstated, and several directors who had voted to remove him left the board. Mr. Altman's alleged dishonesty was likewise central to Mr. Musk's case. During cross-examination, Mr. Musk's lawyer, Stephen Molo, asked Mr. Altman if he was completely trustworthy. He replied, "I believe so." Mr. Molo, "But you don't know whether you're completely trustworthy?" Mr. Altman, "I'll amend my answer to yes." Mr. Molo asked the witness if he always tells the truth. "I believe I am a truthful person," Mr. Altman responded. Mr. Molo, "That wasn't my question, sir. Do you always tell the truth?" Mr. Altman, "I'm sure there's some time in my life when I have not. Humans are fallible, and few, if any of us, can claim to have always been truthful in life, so it may seem odd that Mr. Altman was pressed on this point. But some of the tech moguls angling to become our AI overlords aren't like you and me. They're not only wiser and more capable, but also more conscientious than the rest of us. They operate on a higher moral plane, or at least that's what they tell themselves. A lengthy profile of Mr. Altman in the New Yorker magazine last month noted that the founding premise of OpenAI was that it would have to be different. How so? The firm was established as a nonprofit whose board had a duty to prioritize the safety of humanity over the company's success or even its survival. Thus, the CEO had to be a person of uncommon integrity. OpenAI's board believed that Altman's role entrusted him with the future of humanity. I'll pause while you chuckle. Theories about the need for a philosopher king or great man to advance society date back centuries. Intellectual figures from Plato to Machiavelli and Thomas Carlyle emphasized personal traits such as superior wisdom and exceptional moral character in choosing leaders. The idea was to find these extraordinary men, put them in charge, and align policies with their understanding of the common good. Adam Smith, by contrast, argued that free enterprise and the uncoordinated pursuit of individual self-interest would lead to better outcomes for more people. Society should rely on market forces and voluntary exchange rather than on do-gooders. March marked the 250th anniversary of Smith's seminal text, The Wealth of Nations, published the same year as the Declaration of Independence. As we reflect on America's milestone, it's worth noting that the founders shared Smith's skepticism of philosopher kings and the approach to choosing leaders that today's AI poobahs seem to have embraced. What the American Constitution established was not simply a particular system, but a process for changing systems, practices, and leaders, together with a method of constraining whoever or whatever was ascendant at any given time, Thomas Sowell wrote in his book on social theory, The Quest for Cosmic Justice. Viewed positively, what the American Revolution did was to give the common man a voice, a veto, elbow room, and a refuge from the rampaging presumptions of his betters. Perhaps there's a lesson here for our high-tech betters who are leading the revolution in artificial intelligence. Disruptive AI is coming sooner or later, in one form or another. The transition may be unpleasant for some, but the U.S. would be wise to embrace the technology and stay ahead of global rivals. And the private sector ought to lead the effort. Still, Elon Musk, Sam Altman, and other entrepreneurs shouldn't presume that people of superior virtue will always be in charge and can be counted on to do the right thing. Thankfully, our founders had a deeper understanding of human nature. The Pro-Israel Case Against Military Aid by Daniel J. Samet. The Jewish state is self-sufficient and can deprive its enemies of a convenient target. There's a call to end U.S. military aid to Israel, and it comes from a surprising source. I want to draw down to zero the American financial support, the financial component of the military cooperation that we have, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told 60 Minutes on May 10th. Washington should embrace the proposal. American assistance, totaling about $3.8 billion a year, has become a political liability imperiling the future of U.S.-Israel relationship. The sooner it's phased out, the better for both countries. anti-Zionists have long criticized aid to Israel to little avail, since Americans have been strongly pro-Israel. Not anymore. One recent poll found that 60% of Americans view the Jewish state unfavorably, while 33% believe that Washington provides too much military aid. The latter view is increasingly popular on the left and right. The taxpayers of the United States must no longer be complicit in destroying the lives of innocent men, women, and children in Gaza, Senator Bernie Sanders has said. Last month, he sponsored a resolution to block arms sales to Israel. 40 senators, all Democrats, supported it. Republicans are much more supportive of Israel, but some figures on the right rail against military aid. We're spending tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars over time defending Israel, said Tucker Carlson, who has called Mr. Netanyahu completely evil. At the University of Mississippi in October, a student asked Vice President J.D. Vance why Christians should favor this multi-hundred-billion-dollar foreign aid package to Israel when their religion openly supports the persecution of ours. Israeli officials grasp that the political winds have turned against the Jewish state. Pro-Israel American officials should recognize the same. Both countries should begin phasing out aid now, while Donald Trump, the most pro-Israel president ever, is in office and Republicans control Congress. If Democrats win in 2028, expect them to punish Israel. President Biden denied arms deliveries when he objected to the Jewish state's prosecution of the war in Gaza. What will happen if a Democratic president or a Democratic Congress suddenly cuts off assistance, shocking the Israeli system? Better to begin before then, so Israel can wean itself off on its own terms. Ending military aid would deprive detractors of a talking point that America subsidizes purported Israeli crimes. Although these people won't warm to Israel once the aid ends, its termination will weaken their anti-Zionist argument. Unlike other American security partners, Israel can get by without a check from Uncle Sam. The Jewish state now has a higher per capita gross domestic product than Germany or Qatar. Assistance from Washington accounts for about 8% of Israel's approximately $45 billion defense budget, a smaller share than before. Military aid to Israel, which Washington began supplying in significant amounts during the 1960s, has been a sound investment. The U.S. has financed a reliable ally that fights and wins wars against America's enemies. Yet Israel no longer commands the affection of the American people as widely as it once did. Ending military assistance is a political imperative in changing times. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the May 20th, 2026 issue of the Wall Street Journal. We read from the Wall Street Journal every Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. Your reader has been Corrine. Thank you for listening.